Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to my podcast, Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman. And today, while the Super Bowl is still fresh in everybody's minds, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are having a Super Bowl parade right now on boats. I'm watching, highlights on my phone and stuff like that. Maybe you are as well. I wanted to bring up a very relatable topic for Philadelphia Eagles fans, which is how do the Eagles get there? How do the Eagles get to Super Bowl, as soon as possible? Obviously, next year would be a very tall order, but how do they get back to the Super Bowl? How do they get back to where they were in 2017? And I'm going to tell you guys, there's a very simple solution to getting back to the NFL's elite. And I think that you don't have to look any further than the Super Bowl that was just played. If you watch the Super Bowl that was just played, there are a lot of relatable issues that came up in that game that, number one, the Eagles organization can learn from. Number two, should look very familiar to Eagles fans. But what did we learn from Super Bowl? What did we learn from watching that game that probably every team should learn from watching that game? Number one, the biggest thing is quarterback is the only thing that matters in the NFL. If that's not apparent when Tom Brady was hoisting his seventh Super Bowl championship, I don't know what is. And the fact that Tom Brady didn't even have enough serious pursuit around the league, mostly based off of his age. But I think that also, I think behind the scenes, a lot of it was based off of Tom Brady was calling the shots. I don't think that he gets the LeBron treatment, which is he goes where he wants to go. His agency probably tells people flat out, like, look, this is what he wants to do. This is where he wants to go. I don't think there's a lot of let's bring Tom Brady in and try to woo him. No, Tom Brady is a veteran. He knows. He looked around the NFL landscape and he said, where can I win? And he looked at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers situation and he said, here's a team that has a ferocious front seven already, which everybody kind of knew the previous year. They were the way that the year ended the previous year when they had Jameis Winston at quarterback. I think they were 8-8 or something like that, but mostly because Jameis Winston was so terrible by throwing pick sixes that cost him games. That was pretty much the reason that team didn't make the playoffs. They got hot ending that season. I mean, that was a clear sign that this is a team on the rise. And they had obvious points. They had obvious things that Tom Brady could look at and say, if I go there, I can win with. Number one, like I said, that front seven. They had a very good defense, a very turnover-heavy defense, a very pressure-heavy defense. Shaq Barrett had 20 sacks the previous year. So, and that plus Jason Pierre-Paul. He knows Jason Pierre-Paul from the Giants. This is a guy, their edge rushers are important. And affecting the quarterback is just as important as having the right quarterback. So I'm sure he looked at that situation and said, that front seven's great. The defense doesn't need much. They didn't have much of a secondary, but they had a lot of young cornerbacks that they were already trying to grow. And that's why one of the first two picks was a safety to try to finish that off with Antoine Winfield Jr. So that was, like I said, the Bucs knew their weaknesses and Tom Brady knew their weaknesses. I wouldn't be surprised if he was calling the shots on draft day. So they tried to address that. On the offensive side, I mean, how many teams in the league had a better 1-2 wide receiver punch than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers already? Mike Evans, one of the best receivers in the game, one of the most consistent receivers in the game since he's come into the league. I mean, looking at that guy, who wouldn't want a guy like that? 6'5" that runs a 4.4. I mean, he's not, he's not Megatron or nothing like that, but he's definitely a receiver that any quarterback would love to have and one of the best in the league. Then you look at the emergence of Chris Godwin. These are all things that Tom Brady could see from a mile away and say, I could go win with that. I could go play with that. They had a couple of good tight ends too. Cameron Brate had some good times. But ultimately, when Tom Brady got there, there was a few issues. I would say, number one, the offensive line wasn't great. You got to protect the quarterback, and that's what they did. They went and drafted Tristan Wirfs with their first pick to try to resolve that. And sure enough, it did a good enough job because the offensive line looked pretty good. Then you went and looked at the rest of the receiving core. They needed more weapons. So he went out and he brought Antonio Brown out of retirement. He brought Rob Gronkowski out of retirement. He went and got Leonard Fournette, which was an absolute steal because the Jaguars couldn't trade him for some reason, even though he was, the fourth pick in the draft, not but a couple years ago, with guys a Pro Bowl caliber running back. So you add all those parts. Those were definitely the things, in my opinion, that put them over the hump. But without a doubt, it's the most important thing in all of football, in all of sports, not just football. The quarterback is the most important position in the league. That's why the best two quarterbacks in the league made it to the finals. That's why four of the best quarterbacks in the league made it to the final four, with Josh Allen coming off one of the best years. Obviously the best year of his career, but one of the best jumps that you've seen from a second-year starter to a third-year starter in Josh Allen. There's so many, things that you could point to say that quarterback is really all that matters. And I bring that up up when it comes to the Eagles, because it sounds like the Eagles are going to be jettisoning one of their quarterbacks out. Carson Wentz sounds like he's days from being traded. I don't know when this will happen. It sounds like that trade might be falling apart. Anytime a trade like this lingers, it's not a good thing. I mean, the fact that if it hasn't happened yet, that's gives pause to the fact that it might not happen at all. Because when the trade rumors are coming out so strong to the point where they're naming the actual trade itself, the exact parameters, the exact players, that's a sign that it needs to, it's about to happen. I mean, I've seen, you know, if you follow guys like Adam Schefter on Twitter and stuff like that, sometimes you'll get like a trade, you know, some trade announcement about to be happening, and then like a second later, it's already happened, or minutes later, it's already happened. This is taking way too long, which makes me think that there's a lot of BS involved here, and that it might not actually be as close to being done as everybody thinks. In fact, it seems like there's a lot of signs that it may be falling apart, that the Bears might be growing impatient, the fact that the Colts, it seems like they're trying to use these two teams against each other to try to raise the value or try to raise the return. I don't know. It seems strange. Like I said, the contract, I said in my last podcast that I really thought that, you know, if Nick Foles is getting traded back to the Eagles, I don't think it'll be at $20 million or whatever he's making. I actually think I looked it up. It was closer to $10 million. But ultimately, I think that the Bears and the Eagles would like both quarterbacks to rework their contracts, whether it's Wentz or Foles, to basically either give them some salary cap relief immediately, or to basically not have them on the guaranteed hook that they would be on. So I think that that's still a possibility, and I think that that stuff could be being worked out behind the scenes. But it's definitely troubling. It would not surprise me at all if the Eagles don't play this right, if they completely blow this and Carson Wentz is back next year, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world necessarily, because like I said, it's all about the quarterback, and you are trading a player that could be potentially one of the better quarterbacks in the league, which should give the Eagles pause to do that, because obviously the quarterback position is so important. It's not a bad thing to double down on quarterback. Whether they whether they keep Carson Wentz or not, it's not a bad thing to put that many resources into the most important position in sports. And if they decide to trade Carson Wentz, which it seems like the way that it's trending, it wouldn't be a bad idea for the Eagles to use the number 6 pick or use multiple picks to package with the 6 pick to move up. If they trade away Carson Wentz and get a first round pick, I would not be against the idea of packaging, and I'm sure they'll explore this. I'm sure they'll explore every option because that's what they do. That's their job. But I would not be against them using either the 6th pick to take one of the best quarterbacks in this draft, because let's be honest, this draft is loaded with quarterbacks, and I would not be against them packaging several picks. If they get a first round pick from somebody, to package that pick together to move up in the draft and get one of these elite quarterbacks. Like I said, quarterback is all that matters. It's apparent. It's obvious. It's all that matters in the league. That's why Tom Brady goes where he goes. He's the best quarterback in history, and championships follow. That's the whole point now. I mean, everybody should see that. And the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. He could go anywhere and make them successful. Great quarterbacks are like that. Peyton Manning was always like that. Wherever he went, they immediately became Super Bowl contenders. Great quarterbacks have that effect, and that's really what should be the end game for just about anybody. And I like Jalen Hurts, but I haven't seen enough from him, whether it's in his college career or the short NFL career that he's had, that lets me know that this guy will be that type of guy where wherever he goes, he's going to be commanding championship level compensation. Wherever he goes, that he's going to be a Super Bowl contending quarterback. I haven't seen enough of that yet. I don't know if that's something that you're going to see from any of these other quarterbacks, because let's be honest, Trevor Lawrence will not be available unless the Eagles really go with a massive haul to try to go up to number one to get him, which I really can't see. But the other quarterbacks, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, there's so many good-looking young quarterbacks. I don't really think they're going to go for Trey Lance, considering that they just traded away somebody from the same college in Carson Wentz. But I mean, I wouldn't even go. I'd even be, if they went as far as trading Jalen Hurts to try to move up, if some team had interest in him to try to move up and take a quarterback. Because I hear a lot of people saying that they have a quarterback now, that Jalen Hurts is the guy. There's several things pointing to that, based off the fact that they hired a family friend to be the quarterback's coach there. Although ultimately, I think that was just a really good hire. I don't necessarily think that, I think they got a really good young coaching prospect there, not necessarily just a guy that's friendly with Jalen Hurts or has a good relationship with Jalen Hurts. But at the end of the day, I'm sure Jalen Hurts being here helped facilitate him coming here. So I'm sure that, there's plenty of signs pointing to Jalen Hurts as the future. And you don't typically, it's very unconventional. What the Eagles already did was very unconventional. Drafting a second round quarterback when you have Carson Wentz on a $100 million contract and he's only 27 years old. That's very unconventional. But the Eagles doubled down at quarterback because that's the most important position in sports. And it's also very unconventional to turn right back around and use the number 6 pick on another quarterback. But I wouldn't be against it because it's important. It's that important. I mean, it makes more sense because the Eagles should have learned from their mistakes by not supporting Carson Wentz properly. It might make more sense to try to draft a Devontae Smith or to try to draft Ja'Marr Chase at number 6 or even try to move up for one of those guys. That would make more sense considering that was one of the biggest reasons that Carson Wentz didn't work out, that they really failed to put people around him. And that brings me to my next point, which is if you watch that game, one team looked a lot like the Eagles in that game. It wasn't the Buccaneers. The team that looked a lot like the Eagles were the Kansas City Chiefs, especially on offense. I mean, if you're an Eagles fan and you watch that game, it can't help but look really familiar to how the Eagles looked this year, which was, Patrick Mahomes sure didn't look like Patrick Mahomes. I mean, scoring only 9 points when you're maybe the most explosive, most talented quarterback in the league. Rocket arm, great athleticism, guy's got all the talent in the world. To me, if you look at him and you look at Tom Brady, if you're an alien, you have no idea what they've accomplished in their life, you're going to think that Patrick Mahomes is the better quarterback because of all the physical attributes that he has. That guy is just unbelievable. I love watching that guy. And Carson Wentz has similar attributes. There's similar things that, the throw that he made where he was parallel to the ground, that obviously it hit the running back right in the face mask and he still didn't catch it. That's the type of throws that Carson Wentz has made over his career. Those type of, only 5 guys have the athletic ability or the drive or the just the ability overall to make those type of throws. That's the type of quarterback that Carson Wentz can be. I don't think he's necessarily at the talent level of Patrick Mahomes. I don't think anybody is, but he's in that realm where he's not too far off and he can do all those type of things that Patrick Mahomes does. And the Eagles are about to trade him. I don't think that Jalen Hurts necessarily is at that level. I as much as I like Jalen Hurts and as much as I think he's got better intangibles than Carson Wentz and toughness and character and stuff like that, which are showing, he's the type of guy that I want leading my team. You know what I mean? He's the type of guy you want your daughter going out with type of quarterback. But I don't really think that, when I look at the two, I don't think that Jalen Hurts is ever going to have the physical ability, aside from running, obviously, but I'm talking about the arm. I'm talking about the high percentage throws that Carson Wentz makes when his knee's almost touching the ground against Atlanta, or he's throwing from, basically being sacked and completing a 40-yard pass to Nelson Aguilar. We all remember these amazing plays that Carson Wentz has made where he's getting out of a sack against Washington, and next thing he's springing for a first down. Those are things that when you see him do those things, those highlight reel plays, those throws that he makes like in the Giants game last year where he puts it on a laser in the corner of the end zone to win the game, or things like that. When he did that throw to Corey Clement, I think it was against the Redskins a couple years ago, where he's basically getting sacked and he gets it out. I mean, there's so many highlight reel plays that Carson Wentz has made in a short time in Philadelphia that you can say, I don't really think that Jalen Hurts can do that. And like I said, once again, I'm not saying I'd rather keep Carson Wentz. The reason that I'm cool with going with Jalen Hurts over Carson Wentz is mostly because, those great plays aside are something special to watch, but I'm not really concerned with that. I want to find the guy that can win Super Bowls in Philadelphia, and I don't think that Carson Wentz is that guy. I think we've seen that over 5 years because through the 5 years he's been here, what was his, his great fourth quarter comeback? What was his quintessential moment, his career defining moment in a win that he had aside from the 4 games at the end of 2019 where essentially he was playing against teams you're never going to see in the Super Bowl. He played against 4 horrible teams, most of them from the division. He played the Dolphins, the Redskins, the Giants, the Cowboys. I mean, those games, he's playing horrible teams. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you won those games, but you played against nobody. Then when he got into a playoff game, he pretty much tapped out in the opening drive of the game, essentially, with a concussion, which, like I said, I've gone over this. I feel like the Eagles were disappointed that he didn't try to play through that, even though obviously they can't say that. I do feel like they got tired of him always being unavailable when it came time that they needed him most. I mean, that's something like you expect that from any relationship. If you have a good relationship with somebody and everything's fine and dandy, but every time you have hardship, you look around and that person's nowhere to be found. You know what I mean? You're going to eventually question it. Like, what is with this relationship if every time I need you most, you're never there for me? And that's pretty much how Carson Wentz was year after year after year for, you know, obviously different reasons. But, I mean, that's why, you know, when you look at possibly trading back for Nick Foles, well, the Eagles know that they can count on him when they need him. You know what I mean? Like, that's the maybe he's not good Monday to Friday, Monday to Saturday. But you know when you need him most, when your chips are down, you can throw him out there and he's going to give you his best. And I think that there's some value to that, especially when he's essentially going to come back just to be a closer for Jalen Hurts or a potential starter down the line. If Jalen Hurts doesn't work out, guarantee you that they move on to Nick Foles. And, you know, if say they're 10 games into the season and Jalen Hurts just is, you know, he's been found out by the NFL and the Eagles are, you know, 2-8, they'll go to Foles and they'll just let him ride the rest of the year because ultimately they probably won't be trying to win at that point anyway. They'll probably be thinking, you know, tank for a quarterback. But ultimately, I don't see, you know, I don't see that playing out. I think Hurts is going to be better than that. I think at the very least, he'll have us at like an 8-8 football team. I mean, obviously, it's 17 games next year, but let's say an 8-9 football team once they start playing 17 games. But yeah, I mean, I really just, you know, I think that Jalen Hurts, I think his ceiling's higher, but at the same time, I just don't know what to make of him. I really don't. And I think that being in a position where the Eagles are, because they don't draft this high very often, having a loaded quarterback draft as well, I don't know what the quarterback drafts look like going forward. I haven't necessarily done the research. So much changes throughout a college football season anyway. It's really hard to project a year out what the quarterback situation is going to look like. But I know that, you know, Trevor Lawrence is a guy, just like Andrew Luck was a guy, just like John Elway was a guy. There's always a guy that people are just waiting for this guy to go pro. Peyton Manning, you know what I mean? There's guys like that that it's like they're on the clock for like 4 years where just waiting for them to go pro and teams are just salivating at the idea of getting them to lead a franchise. This draft, I think, has a couple guys like that, not necessarily on the level of Trevor Lawrence, but guys that the Eagles could possibly get that could turn out to be, you know, in the same range. Guys that if it wasn't for Trevor Lawrence probably would have been much more, you know, highly publicized and more talked about, but they're all taking a backseat to Trevor Lawrence. So I think that this is a perfect opportunity to get a guy like a Josh Allen in the draft, who obviously wasn't the number one guy coming out that year. That was another draft where they was loaded with several guys. But I mean, if you look at the way the league is set up now, it's almost set up to you know, guarantee that these young quarterbacks succeed, or at least at a much higher rate. So that's why I'm of the opinion I would definitely be all in if the Eagles decided, you know what, we see this quarterback, he's just got so much more talent than Jalen Hurts. I am definitely down with the idea of them doubling down and drafting a quarterback, drafting another quarterback, which sounds ridiculous to a lot of people, but I really think that, you know, without a doubt that it's the most important position in sports. I don't really think that you can win multiple championships with a guy who's just subpar or just better than average or just very good. You want to get great. You want to get Super Bowl championships, not one. And I just don't know if Jalen Hurts is that guy, because he hasn't shown that even in college. Even in college, when he was a very good quarterback in two different programs, I mean, he took them to the playoffs. I don't know if they had the playoffs the first year. He took them to the national championship his first year, but I don't really know. And he won a national title as well, although I think it was he only played the first half. But, I mean, he does have a lot of great championship moments. Like I say, he didn't win the national championship. It was in his second year, apparently, as I'm checking it here. But he also did, you know, there was that big moment against Georgia where Tua got hurt and he came in and led them back to the SEC championship. You know, so there's obviously, I mean, the guy, he's definitely got some metal. You know what I mean? He's definitely got some toughness and things like that. And he's shown up in big moments, but he's also wilted in big moments. Obviously, the national championship game he wilted in. And then the you know, the SEC championship game, he came in and played the hero. So there's definitely you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. But like I said, I mean, I know, you know, people can develop. I mean, Tom Brady, I don't think he ever won any national championships, but that was by no means, you know, the definition of his career, because you can see what he developed into. And I think that Jalen Hurts has the, like I said, to me, I'm mostly impressed. The same way people always talk about Dak Prescott with his intangibles and his toughness and his leadership and stuff like that. That's what most impresses me about Jalen Hurts. And that's, I think he's also going to be more better in the locker room. I think this is the guy that people always point to, that he's a locker room guy, that people love him, his teammates love him, they flow to him. He's a guy that commands leadership, he commands the locker room's attention. I love all that. But like I said, if you know, you have an opportunity here, if you see a guy that you think might be better, I'm all for doubling down at quarterback, because it's the most important position in sports. I can't stress that enough. The second thing that we should have learned from watching that game is supporting the quarterback is important. Now, number one, you know, if you look at Tom Brady, he didn't have to do a lot. He won MVP. I don't even think he threw for 200 yards. He made the plays when he had to make the plays, which is why, you know, obviously that's what you have to do. But for the most part, I mean, what you really should learn the lesson, and obviously they supported Tom Brady. He said, I wanted Antonio Brown. I want Rob Gronkowski. I want Leonard Fournette. They made it all happen. You know what I mean? They swept them in here. I don't think that any of them were really making huge contracts. But ultimately, you know, he felt like he was, he put, watching it felt like they was, he was putting together the Golden State Warriors of the NFL, because that's kind of what they do. They bring guys out of retirement that are still have some value, typically as like a role player value, like great players that, you know, are towards the end of their career. They do stuff like that, kind of like the Buccaneers did. And then they also have guys that come here dirt cheap just to win Super Bowls, kind of like they do in or to stay, you know what I mean, in Golden State to try to win Super Bowls or championships there, which obviously kind of happened in Tampa Bay. And I think you can see that going forward. You might see that again in the offseason here. People are going to want to try to join up with Tom Brady again and win either another Super Bowl this upcoming season, or you might see guys coming to Tampa Bay for cheap to try to win a Super Bowl. That's kind of what happens. So I don't, you know, begrudge anybody for that. But on the other side, the side that should look way more familiar, and that was the Chiefs. The Chiefs completely fell apart. And it's not too hard to tell why. If you look at, if you watch the game, the Chiefs' offensive line was in shambles, mostly because of injuries to both their starting tackles. But where does that sound familiar? The Eagles had injuries all across the line. The only guy that didn't get hurt this year out of all the Pro Bowlers that they've had in the past was Jason Kelce. He's the only one that survived, and he played the entire season. He toughed it out the entire season. I'm sure he had injuries along the way, because he does every year. But he toughed it out the entire year, and they just put out mash unit after mash unit after mash unit. And you could see, no matter what quarterback you have behind a bad offensive line, they're going to look like that. They're going to look like, you know, how Patrick Mahomes looked when you have a ferocious pass rush constantly in his face. And that's exactly how Carson Wentz looked all year. That's how Jalen Hurts eventually looked. I think towards the third and fourth game where he started to not look so great, I think that's also when you started to notice the pressures adding up and the sacks adding up. So, you know, if there's two trains of thought here with the number six pick, I have no interest. I hear a lot of people out there saying, I want, you know, Patrick Surtain the second. They want linebackers, Micah Parsons, you know, guys like that. I have no interest in any position outside of the two positions that I'm going to, you know, speak about next, which is one that either you're going to support the quarterback, which is offensive line, I'm cool with, receivers, I'm cool with, or quarterback itself. Because like I said, it's a tough determination to make this early about Jalen Hurts necessarily, but that's the position that the Eagles are in. They drafted him. They obviously did their homework when they drafted him, hopefully. But you know, if you see a quarterback on the board that you're like, this is Jalen Hurts, you know, on steroids, or this is Jalen Hurts, you know, maxed out on prime, this is a guy that, you know, I can definitely see being, you know, twice what Jalen Hurts is, then you have to pull the trigger. But at the end of the day, you know, if you're not going to do that, you have to support Jalen Hurts. You got to get more linemen. I like the young linemen the Eagles have, by the way. That's one of the things that I think really gets lost in translation. A lot of people really feel like this offensive line is in shambles because it didn't look good last year. But a lot of the young guys that even went down, to me, looked really good. I really think that Jordan Mailata, I think he's an all-pro, you know, eventually an all-pro caliber kind of guy. I think he could be like the next Adam Villanueva that the Eagles had and let go, and then the Steelers turn into a Pro Bowler. I think he could be a guy like that, a guy that doesn't really have a huge football background. I think Adam Villanueva came from, he played in the Army or something like that. He was a veteran, and they basically just, it took time, but the guy paid off. And I think that you can look at Jordan Mailata and say the exact same thing. I feel like Jack Driscoll showed a lot of ability this last year. I think that you know, some of the linemen, some of the guards, some of the centers. I think the Eagles, I mean, for one thing, they have one of the best offensive line coaches in the entire game, without a doubt. And I couldn't have been happier that they retained him. But if I look at some of the young guys that played this last year, some of the young linemen that they had to trot out there because of injuries, I think Nate Herbig looked really good. I don't know if he's a guy that, you know, you could say he's going to be the future in any position, but I thought that he definitely looked serviceable and a guy that you could plug in as a guard in a pinch. I think that Andre Dillard, like I said, Jordan Mailata looks good enough. I don't really think I need Andre Dillard to work out at this point, but he still could. A lot of people were overreacting about Andre Dillard. I think his first couple starts, I think he looked okay. Last year, obviously, he was hurt the entire year, and all the reports coming out of training camp was that Andre Dillard didn't even remember how to tie his shoes. He didn't even know how to put on his cleats. Like, he was so poor in the training camp and in practice and stuff like that. But that was the exact same reports that we heard about Jordan Mailata. We were hearing that Jordan Mailata might not even make the roster coming out of training camp. So obviously, you can't take that to the bank. So all the reports you heard about how Andre Dillard just looks like a bust, he doesn't look good, that stuff doesn't matter. I mean, whether people are just trying to work on their weaknesses in camp, or maybe these guys are just gamers once they get out there. I mean, it's just, there's too many, we have to see it on the field. So they have two, in my opinion, two guys that could be your bookends for a decade in Andre Dillard and Jordan Mailata. And then they also still have Lane Johnson, who's, getting up there a little bit in age. But last year, I mean, he was just hurt just like everybody else. I think he'll get back to the level that we expect of him in the future. So, in my opinion, if you're going to draft a lineman, it has to be a tackle. I don't think that you can take a lineman sixth, because none of the other linemen are as important at six as a tackle. That's the only position that you can validate drafting that high in the first round. So I don't really think that offensive line is going to be a high position of priority. That's why I think that you're either going to get a receiver. I mean, I'll call the shot. Best receiver on the board, I'm pretty sure the Eagles are going to take that to try to help out this offense, to try to help out Jalen Hurts. But even, once again, if you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, they have some of the best receivers in the entire league, some of the fastest receivers in the entire league, some of the best offensive players in the entire league. You can't name five receivers better than Tyreek Hill. You can't name five tight ends better than Travis Kelce. Maybe not in history. These guys, Travis Kelce, he's probably a top five tight end in history at this point based off of the statistical output that he's putting up in Kansas City. And these guys were complete non-factors based off the fact that the protection continued to break down. So obviously offensive line is one of the most important things in the NFL. That's what won the Eagles their Super Bowl back in 2017, was their offensive line. They need to continue to put resources in that. But like I said, at number six, I don't think that that's the spot. I would say, and like I said, I really like some of the young guys that they've put out this year. I really like guys like Herbig, guys like Mailata, guys like Dillard we don't know about yet, guys like Jack Driscoll I thought showed a lot of ability, and there was a lot of reports that they really liked him in camp as well. So there's a lot of guys there, and then there's a lot of guys coming back. Brandon Brooks will be back. Lane Johnson will be back. Jason Kelce, we don't know about, but Isaac Seumalo will be, and he could easily kick inside because he was a center in college. So I feel like they can put together a pretty solid offensive line, if not a spectacular offensive line, based off of those guys. Just as long as we can have a little luck in the health department, I think that's the biggest thing. And I think that the Eagles have a decent amount of weapons, but they still need a number one wide receiver, a guy that can take on a number one cornerback and be Jalen Hurts' safety blanket. But for my money, there's only two positions that I would take at the number six pick, whether it's a new quarterback or a receiver. Those are the only two that I'm really interested in. They could also go defensive line. I think that the Super Bowl proved that defensive lines win championships just as much as anything else. I would say that, the quarterback's the most important, but affecting the quarterback is the second most important. And that's whether it's supporting the quarterback or attacking the quarterback when it comes to the defensive front seven. And that's why Tampa Bay, to me, if I could give an MVP, I'd give the MVP to Tampa Bay's front seven. I think that really what won them the game. It also is what got the Eagles in 2017 to the Super Bowl. So while we're looking at a different team entirely in Tampa Bay, the Eagles can also learn from their own history, and I think they will. I don't think that this draft really has a ton of great edge rushers. I think that that's one of the bigger things that's missing in this draft. The only guys that I could say that really look like they could possibly be a defensive end that the Eagles would be willing to take at the sixth pick. I mean, it depends on how you look at Micah Parsons. A lot of people say he has a lot of edge rush ability, and the Eagles obviously need a linebacker. But I think that the way the Eagles like to play is, I think that they want a guy who could who could basically play with his hand in the dirt every single play. But, you know, that'd be one guy. I don't really think that this draft really has an elite edge rusher or an elite lineman. I mean, Penei Sewell is probably the best offensive lineman. Once again, if he's there, maybe the Eagles take him at 6. There's still a lot of stuff that happens between now and the draft, you know, that obviously is going to kind of shake out the board. We're going to see how these players fall. But from this early on, like I said, to me, it's really quarterback or receiver, and I'm leaning more towards receiver. But it really depends on how the first couple draft picks go, or how, you know, how good these guys look when they're looking at them. But there's a lot to be said about, you know, what's going to happen going forward. So it's something that, you know, we're all going to find out. And I'm obviously going to do a lot more podcasts between now and, you know, whatever happens, whether it's free agency or whether it's the draft. The last thing that I really wanted to go over, and this is something that I tried to stay away from, a topic I really didn't want to do too much time on, but it was a big topic in Philadelphia once again, and that was Deuce Staley. Why didn't Deuce Staley get a better crack at head coach? Or more specifically, minority hiring practices in the NFL. And I think in Philadelphia, especially considering that there is such a large minority population in Philadelphia. But looking at the Super Bowl, which just happened, it's hard to ignore the fact that three of the four candidates or three of the four coordinators that could have been potential head coaching candidates going into this offseason were African-American. And not one of them, as far as I can remember, got a serious look. Not one of them got a serious interview. I don't remember hearing, like, you know, this guy's in the running. Eric Bieniemy was the big name that everybody was talking about. Todd Bowles, obviously, I think he got an interview with the Eagles, even though he used to be with the Eagles. But there's three guys, three of the four coordinators from Super Bowl winning or championship, conference championship winning teams. We're in the Super Bowl, and none of them really got a fair shake. None of them got a fair crack at a head coaching position in the league. And to bring this back to Philadelphia, I know a lot of people were upset that Deuce Staley didn't get the job. I was never a huge fan of Deuce Staley getting the job. Now, I'm going to be clear about that. Deuce Staley, the way that I understand how the NFL looks at the league, how NFL owners and how NFL ownership groups and GMs look at what they want as their head coach. They want guys that affect the quarterback position the most, because the quarterback position is the most important position. So that's why they typically hire guys that are quarterbacks coaches, offensive coordinators with quarterback coach backgrounds. And Deuce Staley's at odds because he's a running back coach, and the running back position in general is going the way of the dinosaur. Nobody really cares. You know what I mean? Running backs. That's why you got a guy like Leonard Fournette, who went from being a top five pick to being like a waiver wire ad for like a 1 year, $3 million deal. Like, that's insane. He's one of the most talented running backs in the league, and that's how far the NFL has devalued running back. So if you're coaching a devalued position, you can't really expect to get a head coaching job based off of that. If he really wants to be a head coach, he needs to start learning the quarterback position. That's the fact. And I think that Eric Bieniemy has a little bit of that same stigma, former running back. I think he was a running backs coach. Obviously, Andy Reid brought him up, made him offensive coordinator. But there's something that these two guys have in common. Number one, Andy Reid is going to get most of the credit when it comes to the offense because he calls the plays and he's the architect. So, you know, that plus Patrick Mahomes obviously is going to get a lot of the credit. So I do feel like Eric Bieniemy is getting a little bit undervalued from that perspective. But I want to focus on the two guys on the Super Bowl winning side, because typically when teams win the Super Bowl, and we know this in Philadelphia, when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, people just started raiding our cupboard, man. They just took Frank Reich from us. They took John DeFilippo from us. I'm sure other position coaches that I'm not remembering were taken from us. That's typically what happens. When teams win the Super Bowl, coordinators and position coaches, people just start snatching them up because they want to, you know, they want to bring that success to their program. But why didn't that happen in Tampa Bay? Why didn't that happen when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the Super Bowl with Byron Leftwich, who's not a running backs coach? He's a former quarterback, a former quarterbacks coach, a very talented quarterback too. I remember watching him in Marshall in college. I mean, this guy here, he came out as the number 7 pick in the draft. He's obviously had a lot of success, even with what he did with Jameis Winston. I think was somewhat impressive. Jameis Winston threw for 5,000 yards under Byron Leftwich and Bruce Arians' offense. But I do think that, once again, Bruce Arians is going to get a lot of credit for that. I think that, especially when Tom Brady comes over and wins a Super Bowl in his very first year, to the point where it almost looks like, I mean, Bruce Arians came out and flat out said, that Tom Brady was basically coaching the offense. Not necessarily calling plays and stuff like that, but he said in so many quotes, he said that I basically let Tom Brady coach. That was one of the, that's paraphrasing, but that was one of the quotes that he said. He said that Bill Belichick didn't let him coach in New England. But at the end of the day, he also said after he won the Super Bowl that I didn't do anything. Bruce Arians said, I didn't do anything. He said it was my coordinators. He said my coordinators, you know, were calling the shots. So he basically said, you guys should be looking at Byron Leftwich and you should be looking at Todd Bowles, my defensive coordinator, who also, you know, who are you going to give credit for him wiping out that high-powered offense? You know what I mean? Like, if you want to give credit to the offense to Tom Brady, who are you going to give credit for that amazing defensive performance? It has to be Todd Bowles, right? He shut down the best offense in the entire league over the past couple of years and one of the best offensive coaches in the league over the past couple of decades. But there's two ways to look at this. There's two ways to look at, you know, you could look at it like, you know, obviously Tom Brady's the reason the offense had so much success in Tampa Bay. You know, he went to that team and they immediately became a Super Bowl winning team. That's kind of similar to how when Peyton Manning went to Denver and they immediately went to a Super Bowl. A lot of people said, obviously it's Tom Brady. It's obviously Peyton Manning. That's one way to look at it. But that didn't change the fact that Adam Gase immediately became a hothead coaching candidate, even though he turned out to be a complete bust in two different stops. So Adam Gase went on to become, and this was the same year that the Eagles were looking for a head coach. They actually wanted Adam Gase, and they didn't get him. And then Adam Gase went to Miami, completely screwed the pooch there. Then he got a second chance after a very poor job in Miami. He got a second chance in an even worse franchise in New York as the Jets head coach, and he stuck it out there, and you know, for an entire season till this last year they finally let him go. So that's two stops he had, two horrible stops that he had, even though he really didn't do anything in the first stop to make you think he deserved a second stop. So I mentioned that for two reasons. Number one, why, you know, like I said, to me, it's obvious that if you have one coach in Adam Gase that for whatever reason gets a head coaching job based off of being carried by Tom Brady, but, you know, sorry, not Tom Brady, by Peyton Manning. But for some reason, Byron Leftwich can't get any type of love, even though he obviously benefited very highly from Tom Brady. You know what I mean? Like, it's, to me, it's the same thing. Yeah, sure, Tom Brady had played a huge part in the success of the Bucks. But that doesn't mean that, you know, it's the same thing that when, you know, same thing with Adam Gase. He got a head coaching job for doing obviously next to nothing with Peyton Manning. So, you know, and he had two chances. Todd Bowles, a lot of people look at him and say, you know what, that guy had a head coaching chance. It didn't work out. Even though the head coaching opportunity he had was the same horrible Jets franchise, you can't expect guys to go to, I mean, there's certain franchises that you can't expect people to succeed with, and that's one of them, the Jets. So in my opinion, Todd Bowles should, I mean, after this performance, why is he not getting a second look? Why is he not getting a second chance at a head coach? Because obviously he coached the game of his life against one of the best offenses in the league and completely shut down, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs. So to me, there's too much evidence here of prejudicial hiring practices in the NFL that I think that, you know, people are just blind to. And I wanted to talk about it because, like I said, it's been on my mind since the Super Bowl happened, and I think it's just a shame. Like I said, I still don't like Eric Bieniemy. I know a lot of people want Eric Bieniemy to be the Eagles head coach. I still don't like Deuce Staley as the Eagles head coach. I'm not saying I don't like them as people. I'm saying I'm not. Those weren't the guys that I wanted. I said this in a previous podcast. Whoever the Eagles got, I wanted him to be somebody that affected the quarterback position because it is the most important position in sports, and it is the most important to make sure that you give that job to the head coach. Because if you bring in a guy, say the Eagles, you know, and I really like Brian Johnson, who they just brought in to be the quarterback's coach for Jalen Hurts. So say he turns out to be the next Sean McVay, the next, you know, guy that everybody's looking at as a boy wonder. This guy's just got, you know, he's got it, man. Like, this guy's going to be a head coach soon. You lose him. If you bring in those guys and you don't eventually make them head coaches, you always lose them. If you bring in a guy, so they just brought in the new offensive coordinator that they just brought in. If he turns out to be the mastermind, kind of like Frank Reich, a lot of people think that Frank Reich was the mastermind to the Eagles 2017 offensive output, and we lost him because he wasn't the head coach. So to me, it's always always important, no matter how much you like a guy, no matter how much, you know, you might, there might be some great, you know, they might have picked up a great defensive coordinator in Philadelphia. Defensive coordinators don't get the same opportunities anymore because it's an offensive-driven league. The rules are basically trending towards quarterbacks. They're trending towards offense. So you pretty much have to go with that flow and get a guy that is a offensive coach and make him your head coach so you can guarantee to keep him, even if it's just as a coordinator. It's not like the old days where you could just give a guy a coordinator job and he would be happy, because a lot of times around the league, you're looking at, just like we had here in Philadelphia, Doug Peterson was the offensive coordinator, but he was also the head coach. So no offensive coordinator would have liked to come here and play under Doug, because he wouldn't be able to call his own offense. He wouldn't be able to run his own show. That's pretty much how the NFL hierarchy is run now. Head coaches are essentially offensive coordinators that get to run the show. You give them the head coaching position. You give them the full range to the entire thing, because you essentially just want to guarantee that you keep them, that they can't be promoted any further. And that's what the Eagles did with Nick Sirianni. I'm still not sure how that's going to work out, but I like the fact that they at least followed the trend. They at least, and I think it's a trend that they somewhat started. They were somewhat responsible for starting when they first hired Andy Reid as straight from the quarterbacks coach in Green Bay to head coach. A lot of people really questioned that way back then, and it turned out to be a great hiring as Andy Reid's become a Hall of Famer, maybe a top 10 coach of all time. That's something that even back then, I think they were ahead of the game. And they were ahead of the game. Andy Reid was ahead of the game, because even back then, when everybody cried that they wanted Ricky Williams at number two, and he took Donovan McNabb, that was the right call too, because Ricky Williams never had the type of success as far as winning that Donovan McNabb had. I mean, Ricky Williams had a great career. He had 10,000 career rushing yards and all that, and he was a great running back to watch, yada, yada, yada. But Donovan McNabb, he did more as far as winning games, and that's something that Andy Reid knew even back then, that the quarterback position was the only thing that mattered, and the league has evolved with that thought process. So like I said, I have no issues that the Eagles went that direction. I'm not saying I wanted any other candidate necessarily, but I would have loved to hear Byron Leftwich's name in some interviews, because I think that he's a guy who's getting way overlooked, and that's why Bruce Arians is trying to basically put their name out there when he won the Super Bowl. He's basically saying, like, look, I got two amazing coordinators, and he does. Two guys that in good situations could probably be great coaches. Todd Bowles' time in New York should by no means spell out disaster in any other situation. If he gets hired by a good franchise, I think he'd be a great head coach. And once again, being a defensive mind, being a defensive coordinator is going to get in the way of that, because it's just not the way the NFL is anymore. I'm sure that if I looked around, if I did the math, but probably 60 to 70% of the head coaches in the league right now are probably offensive guys. And the older ones that are still head coaches, there's probably a lot of like older names that are defensive guys, like Bill Belichick. And then you got guys like John Harbaugh, who's a special teams coach, although I still feel like he's kind of a defensive guy. I'm sure if I go through his background, even though he came from Philadelphia, I'm sure there's some defensive background in there. But it's really a much higher ladder to climb and a much quicker ladder to climb if you're an offensive guy and if you're connected to the quarterback. The more influence you have over the quarterback, the higher you're going to rise. And that was something that helped Adam Gase. I mean, a lot of people really, Peyton Manning was obviously the big success story that was there before he left, but also he got a lot of credit for what he did with Tim Tebow and winning games with Tim Tebow, even though Tim Tebow was terrible. He was a terrible passer. He obviously won games, but it was mostly with his legs. That was just, you know, they kind of lumped those two things together. But like I said, that's the most important thing, and I think that Byron Leftwich should be a hot head coaching candidate this next season after what happened. He, like I said, he'll probably never get it based off of, you know, Tom Brady will get all the credit, and based off the fact that Byron Leftwich, you know, he I don't even know, you know, Bruce Arians probably gets all the credit. Once again, offensive-minded head coach. But it's a shame, because I think there's more to it than that. I do think that it's not conscious. I don't think it's conscious that these guys are getting overlooked. But when you have a Super Bowl play out like it did, where, you know, at least half of the most influential coaches were African-American, and none of them get an opportunity when, you know, typically, traditionally in the NFL, traditionally teams that win Super Bowls, their coordinators get plucked away and made head coaches. Didn't happen this last year, though, and you got to wonder why. When three out of the four are African-American, you got to wonder why these guys aren't getting the same opportunities. So I'm going to go ahead and end it. Like I said, I don't want to, you know, spend too much time going on about that topic, but I do think it's an important topic to talk about, and I'm going to go ahead and end it there. So if you guys like this podcast, I'd really appreciate a follow. I'm trying to pump this up. It's definitely going better. I can see the snowball effect. I can see this podcast rolling downhill a little bit, picking up some steam. So if you guys like what you hear, do me a favor. over and hit that follow button. Other than that, I'll catch you guys next time. This one here, I typically do Monday shows. This one here was not a Monday show. This was just a random show for some thoughts that I had. But I do plan on doing another Monday show. Hopefully Carson Wentz will be traded by then, or something will happen by then, because otherwise I might not have a ton of topics to talk about. But hopefully there'll be a big story. There's always stuff to talk about when it comes to Philadelphia Eagles and Philadelphia Eagles sports. So I'm going to go ahead and end the podcast there. This has been Philadelphia Eagles Talk, and I'm your host, Kevin Woodman. Thanks for listening.